Welcome to the Barth Calderone Culture of Leadership Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women's President's Organization, Vistage, the Young President's Organization, Tiger 21, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock with the Asset Protection, Estate Planning, and Business Planning, Barth Calderone. You're here on Wealth Protector TV. Thanks so much for taking a minute to watch this. And really excited to have John Riera here as my guest, who is the founder of American Air Testing. John, welcome.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here today. And thank you for inviting me for this conversation.
Absolutely. And I've got to just start off by saying, because I want to get into what you're doing with the business. It's a fascinating topic. But I want to start off by saying you work with your wife, your son, and your daughter. How did that come to be? How did you accomplish that? And are you fighting all the time or do you all get along?
Well, my wife and I started 20 years ago. And my children were still, I don't want to say relatively young, but, you know, in approaching their 30s.
Okay.
And I offered my son an opportunity to come on board, and he fell in love with the business. And then about a few years after that, my daughter Michelle came on board, and she pretty much runs the show. My son and I do the field work, and my wife is the webmaster. She keeps us out of trouble as far as legal, because she has some legal background. And that's how we started the whole business.
My gosh. Well, I know you get together as a family. So are you able to separate work from personal with the family, or is it all blend together?
Well, the nice thing is with technology, it's real easy. My son is six blocks away. My daughter lives in the in-law downstairs. And my wife and I are upstairs, and we have enough room to run the business from the house. So in San Francisco, you know, commercial real estate is very expensive. And if you can, you know, do both in the same environment, it leaves a little bit of money left over to pay the bills.
Yeah, what a great arrangement. Well, let's talk about your business. And, you know, it's very close to the law firm, because at the law firm, we work with a lot of, you know, rental property owners, commercial developers who are dealing with liability all day long, you know, mold issues and tenant issues and, you know, things that go wrong with the quality of the unit. So let me ask you, tell me about your business. How did you get started, and what is the focus of what you're doing?
Well, got started 20 years ago, but I have a background in real estate as a private investor. I was a licensed appraiser back in the 90s. So between buying and selling real estate as a private investor and also going through thousands of buildings doing inspections to be able to do your due diligence, that was my background. Then one day, an appraiser buddy of mine gave me a call and said, "Hey, John, they got a new law on the books. They have to disclose for mold, and there's no inspectors out there." So at the time, I was actually had taken a leave of absence from the phone company. I was a system integration manager back in the dot-com bubble.
Oh, and AT&T or something?
Well, at the time it was SBC Global, now it's AT&T. It went through Pacific Bell, again, that whole progression. So I was actually hired to go back to the head of the video conferencing department, and then 9/11 happened.
Oh.
And I had been inspecting this other business as far as mold inspection was concerned. And so when 9/11 happened, they put a hiring freeze. So my wife and I, we discussed, well, should I wait for corporate America, which do I really want to go back? Or do I want to take a chance on this business. And I have had multiple careers. By the time you get to this age, hopefully you do. Did 100 dials a day for a couple of weeks. And before I knew it, I was inundated with business.
Well, so wait, so you decided to go all in.
All in.
So you didn't have one foot left over here. You jumped all in and just started pounding the phones?
That is correct.
Wow. And how long did it take you to start having people where they're writing you a check to do things? Was it weeks, months?
60 to 90 days.
Wow.
It takes a while to generate, but I mean, I had the training. I'd already taken training back east for industrial hygiene, and it was the certified indoor environmentalist, which is a great course. It gives you a general idea of all of the professions that you'll be dealing with, the lingo that you need to be speaking in order for everybody to understand each other, which was easy for me to comprehend because of my other background. Right. And before I knew it, I was out testing. And then as time evolved, in San Francisco, most of the properties are pre-1981. So I found that there was a need for me to get certified as both an asbestos, California asbestos consultant, and also as a lead inspector assessor through CDPH, California Department of Public Health. And I passed all of those tests, and I've had the good fortune to be able to continue to want to learn, and I can pass tests and I can assimilate. And I had a college education in different disciplines, but I had the capacity to make it successful. And now I'm still doing it 20 years later.
So you started out doing that cold calling, you got clients, and the main focus of the business is commercial, residential, what? I mean, what are the your main focus? Going in there and making sure things are cleaned up or cleaning after messes?
So that's a great question. It's loaded. We do residential. That's probably 60% of what we do. And industrial, commercial is the rest. And again, we do everything from LEED certification testing to deploy the environmental credits for new buildings that are being deployed. But in the residential real estate, multi-unit, a lot of times we get called in because there's a potential legal issue with a tenant. They're saying that there's a mold problem. And so we go in and either verify that that's the case. We would write a protocol for an abatement contractor to come in to do the repair under containment using engineering controls and keeping everybody safe. And then we would come back and do the clearance testing so that it's safe for reoccupancy and for worker safety. We're also hired by attorneys.
Well, let me ask you a question there. So on the mold issue specifically, because you and I have talked offline, and at our law firm, we're providing asset protection for property owners. We see a lot of liability around mold, and it's, our landlord attorneys, we're seeing a lot of those cases. And I don't think a lot of people, myself included, know, okay, what really is the issue with mold? Because you hear black mold, but we've seen cases where there's a mold complaint, and it's led to multi-million dollar settlements and the landlords, losing the property. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little about mold and how you should handle mold before it blows up into a lawsuit, and what types of mold actually lead to the biggest problems.
Very interesting question. Let me give you the simple formula.
Okay.
No water, no elevated humidity, no mold growth. If you keep the envelope sealed, no roof leaks, no plumbing leaks, whatever, or if that does occur, to be able to get on it and have it professionally dried within, 24 to 36 hours, then there probably isn't a need to call me out to do any type of testing. So being on top of, you know, the wear and tear and conditions that prop up need to be addressed immediately. Then there's what's called lifestyle issues. Sometimes you have a tenant who, shall I say, never turns on the fans, never opens the windows. There's very poor ventilation. And we've gone into some places where, if you've ever seen hoarders on TV, where the walls are stacked floor to ceiling with books and clothing, and there is no airspace, and things get wet, and those are all causalities for potential for mold. So it's really a good idea in the leases that you have that you make it a responsibility for the tenant to not only have insurance, but to have done an inspection at the beginning of occupancy, and that they have some type of a timeline to report damages, or potentially they become liable. But that's a legal issue that's outside of my scope of work. But periodic inspections would go a very long way. And then
Is black mold? Is that a...
It's like Xerox and copies. It's like any mold can have a color. Not all black mold, which usually the attorneys are pointing out a specific mold called Stachybotrys, which usually is black, but there are other molds that are not toxigenic or can be toxigenic that are not Stachybotrys. That's kind of a fine line. The bottom line is, if you have a moisture problem, it's there. You get rid of the moisture problem. You do the recommended protocol to remediate. You test, you're done. I'm trying to keep it real simple, you know.
Are attorneys calling you in to do what? And is it the attorney that is going after the landlord, or is it the landlord that's trying to prevent something? What are you, what side?
We represent both sides. We've represented both sides. We work with attorneys. One strictly concentrates on tenants, and I have another one who strictly represents owners or management companies, depending. So for us, it's like, you know, we're clean hands. We have no vested interest in whether there's a remediation or not. We just call it out the way that science gives us. You know, when we put a report together, before we even go out to a project, we have the client fill out a questionnaire, because more data is better than less. And we have the daunting problem of trying to make the invisible visible. So we have to back it up with science. We do lots of photography. If there are areas that are wet, we're noting that it is wet with a moisture meter. We have an elevated humidity with a hygrometer. And then we look at the outside of the building, and we're always trying to figure out, is it a bottom-up problem? Is it a top-down problem? Is it a sideways problem, or is it a combination of any of the three? So that's kind of like a simple way of mapping out a strategy on how to attack a building that may have a mold problem.
Can mold actually cause respiratory issues? Is that, you know, a bad scenario that you see?
If you have an underlying condition, it can exasperate it, absolutely. And we are hired by allergen doctors. We work with quite a few. And so a lot of times when they're trying to figure out why their patient is getting Alzheimer's disease, or why they're having problems with upper respiratory, which is usually the malady that the majority of the population suffers from, we can actually come in and show the exact species or genera of molds that are in the air. And then they can either do a blood, skin, or urine analysis to see if they become hypersensitive to any of the molds that we find.
Okay, because John, that is what we see in lawsuits at the firm, is upper respiratory issues is the complaint, especially with kids, little babies and
stuff. Especially, yes.
Yeah, okay, all right.
It's a smaller immune system, higher probability of it affecting a child or an elderly individual as opposed to the average adult out there who is in decent health. Yes, right. Absolutely.
Okay, so then you do a report. So I guess your takeaway advice for someone who's owning rental property, what would you tell them when it comes to issues like, you know, mold and maybe others?
Well, it comes down to having good communication with your tenants and to give them some type of easy mechanism, even if it's just a simple checklist. If you had any water leaks, whatever, and you know, everything is electronic, everything is short and simple, to come up with a checklist of, are you having any of these problems? And if nothing is checked off and they sign it, at least you have some type of documentation shy of going in there and actually doing a walkthrough or having a manager that you're working with do a walkthrough, maybe every 3 months. Right. It depends on the neighborhood. It depends on, you know, the actual individual tenant, whether you're having personality conflicts with that person or everything is free-flowing. At least some type of consistency with communication go a long way.
Great advice. Now, John, before we started shooting this episode, we were talking about your early days working in restaurants through the family. And so I think we're now getting towards dinner time and maybe we have to get some Italian restaurants lined up or something.
Sounds like a good idea to me, but except I live with superb cooks in my own family because, again, we all grew up in restaurants, including my wife, and my daughter has all of my mother's recipes. So. Oh. I'm going to die happy. I'm sorry.
I'll wait for the invitation for dinner. That's one house I want to go to.
There you go.
John, thank you. This is great information, really insightful, and love to have you back as you know, sure. You keep bringing more information. I want to thank everybody for joining and listening. John, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. And if anybody wants to get in touch with us, I'm more than happy to give a free consultation. AmericanAirTesting.com.
Awesome. No, we'll have your contact information around this video. So thanks. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
Okay.